Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is KJ and Lyons. KJ Carson and John Lyons right now on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons continuing here on WEEI. Hope you're having a great Saturday. 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. We're about 15 minutes away from Thor Nystrom from Fantasy Life joining us. John, that is the preview on Netflix. It comes Wednesday, the comeback, the 2004 Red Sox championship.
Yeah, what I'm thinking is we have a show Wednesday night. Maybe we should just, you know, play that on the TV and sit here and talk about
No, because the way it works.
But I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
So, look, Dan Shaughnessy put forth the argument that the 2004 Red Sox is the greatest Boston Red Sox, is the greatest Boston story for sports. I would argue that the 1986 Red Sox story is the greatest story, though it doesn't have a happy ending. I don't know how old you were at the time. Don't even say it out loud. But if you follow from the ALCS Game 6 all the way through Game 7 of the World Series, it was the most fascinating sports story still, at least in my lifetime, that I've seen, because the precursor leading into the World Series, leading up to even Game 7, which Game 7 of the 86 series is the most watched World Series game of all World Series games. And that's not even the one that everybody knows the 86 World Series for. So I think the 86 World Series is an amazing story, even though it doesn't have a great ending. It's fascinating because all the things that happen at that time, right? It's Gene Mauch. It's John McNamara. Neither one of them won championships at that time. Dave Henderson hits the home run off of Donnie Moore. Donnie Moore, a year later, would end up committing murder-suicide with his family, and people believe it was tied to that hit. Dave Henderson then, again, becomes a star in the 86 World Series, but it doesn't turn out. You have Clemens versus Gooden. Gooden's career is never the same, really, after 86 the drugs hit. Then once you get back in 88, then you have the Bash Brothers, and who's on that team? Dave Henderson doing it's a fascinating story of what happens over the next 5 years, where I think 2004 was just about like, okay, you got past the Yankees, and the World Series against the Cardinals was absolutely boring.
So I go 04 here, and I, full disclosure, my favorite Boston sports story is the 01 Patriots, but I think if I look at it like trying to be fair and objective, I think the 04 story is the best story for a few reasons. Number one is the Red Sox had been a team at that time for over 100 years, but there were very few people alive, and Shaughnessy talked about this in his column, that had actually seen them win a World Series, right? Because they hadn't won in 86 years, and you had all these instances of them coming close and failing, whether it was 1946, 1967, 75, 86. I mean, we're talking seven-game losses in the World Series, and then you put it to like 99, you have the All-Star game at Fenway, Ted Williams comes back, you still lose to the Yankees in the ALCS that year. Then in 03, you're up 5-2 in the eighth inning of Game 7 of the ALCS. Grady Little leaves Pedro in. We get our hearts broken by Aaron Boone, and you kind of feel like, oh my God, they might never win at that point. You know, when are they? If not now, it's probably going to be never. And then you get to 04, and you had the fight the year before in the ALCS. Then July 24th, you have that big fight, Varitek and A-Rod. You have Nomar getting traded a week after
that. That's all Yankees.
Cabrera and Doug Mankiewicz and Roberts coming in. And then you get to the playoffs. So they sweep the Angels out. For them to beat the Yankees in the way they did, right? The team that had tormented them for 86 years, that had won 25 or whatever championships since the Red Sox had traded Babe Ruth to them, or sold Babe Ruth to them. For them to overcome that Yankees team in the fashion they did, with the late inning heroics in game 4 and 5, shilling on the bloody sock in game 6. And then that Cardinals team, which had won 100 games, by the way, for
that
the Red
Sox. That
was
the most boring World Series ever.
I disagree. Game 1, you win 11-9 on a late Mark Bellhorn hits a bottom of the 8th home run. And then you finally, you win, I think game 3 was like 4-1 or something. I don't remember exactly. And then game 4 was 3-0. So I know it was a sweep, but you finally overcome 86 years of heartache, 86 years of coming close and fail. I mean, there were, again, so, huge parts of New England that had no idea what that felt like and thought, frankly, they were never going to win one, and they finally overcame it.
So just because the story ends well doesn't necessarily mean it's the best story. I would love to see someone do a full story on 86, because 86 is still one of the most... think about it. With the advent of TV and the bigger superstars that would come later after that, why is Game 7 of the 86 World Series still the most watched World Series game? It was because of all the drama that led up to it. Like, literally, you waited the whole season to be able to say, wow, you're going to have Clemens versus Gooden? I don't think there's anything that matches that today. Like, you couldn't say, wow, Ohtani versus, and you were like, meh. Clemens versus Gooden was the conversation of the day. Who was better? And both of them were at the pinnacle of their career at that time, and neither one of them were the best pitcher in that series. It was Bruce Hurst. You never heard of a situation where an MVP had been named and that team would go on to lose the series. That's just how dramatic it was, but it goes back to that ALCS where it ends up being the end of pretty much Reggie Jackson's active career. It's the end of Gene Mauch's career for the most part. Even McNamara, the manager of the Red Sox at the time, he only has one more year with the Red Sox, and then he kind of goes off into the Indians, and then those days are over. I just wish that somebody would do that 86 some justice. And if you watch it, especially if you're a younger person who only knows 04 and the Patriots mixed in and all that with all those other feelings, to know how much that story pulled you in. It was like the last great year of Jim Rice, Oil Cam Boyd going missing around game 2 or 3, Strawberry hitting the home run in Fenway. It was just absolutely fascinating, where with the Red Sox winning it in 2004, I think really the highlight of everything is Dave Roberts stealing second. And then going to Yankee Stadium.
That's an iconic moment in the history of Boston sports.
But what I'm saying is, though, that's the crescendo of that entire story, really. Once they got into that World Series, it was a snore fest. It was boring.
Boring. I know it was a sweep. I get what you're saying. But
that's what I mean
I would
by
say
it was boring.
Boring is too strong.
Like even that. in the 86 series, the Red Sox, after what happened with Buckner in game 6, they were up 3-0 at the top of the 5th in game 7. So people even still forget that the Red Sox still had a chance to win it. In game 7, there was a rain delay between the 2 days. It was just absolutely fascinating. I hope there's a filmmaker out there who has a budget and a green light. Go back and do that 86 season, some serious justice, especially when Dave Henderson hits that home run in Anaheim, and how there's a magic that happens where you're like, wow. Not Carlton Fisk-esque, but very Carlton Fisk-esque, because it then gets them to the World Series. And then it looks like they're about to win it. To me, it's the more fascinating story, even though it has a bad ending, right? But I get the 2004 story because it's historical. So, yeah, it's a fascinating thing. I can't wait to see it Wednesday, relive some of it. I remember getting my dad a hat. He's a chemical engineer for 30 years for Exxon. And him wearing Red Sox gear that year, and they were like, take that hat off. They were so mad in the New York area. What are you doing with that hat on? My son's a buzz. Who cares? It's AJ. What are you doing? So, all right, look, we're going to talk more football. We've got Thor Nice from Next, from Fantasy Life. Plus, we also have the Lions Den still to come in about 30 minutes. But right now, it's time to trend with Zach Coe.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Patriots are in London getting ready for their matchup with the Jaguars tomorrow morning. Final injury report was released yesterday. Running back Ramondre Stevenson is listed as questionable with a foot injury, but told the media he should be ready to go, while tackle Verdian Lowe was ruled out with an ankle injury. Kickoff in London set for 9:30 a.m. tomorrow. Bruins' three-game road trip rolls on tonight as they are in Salt Lake City taking on the Utah Hockey Club. Puck drop from the Delta Center set for 9 p.m. Yankees looking to punch their ticket to the World Series tonight in Cleveland after last night's 8-6 Game 4 win. First pitch from Progressive Field set for 8 p.m. Meanwhile, in the National League, the Mets staved off elimination with a 12-6 home win over the Dodgers. L.A. will have another chance to advance tomorrow night back in Los Angeles. Some Celtics roster news. The team has waived guard Lonnie Walker IV. Although he will likely be joining the G League's main Celtics. Finally, it's College Football Saturday. Games today are headlined by top-ranked Texas hosting fifth-ranked Georgia. And don't forget, you can catch Westwood One's coverage of that game right here on WEEI at 7 p.m. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
This is KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI on your Saturday, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. We're 2 minutes away from Thor Nystrom. You got to play Immigrant Song with a guy named Thor is coming on the show, right, John?
Yeah, exactly. Best name in the business, and I'm looking forward to his insights.
Look, real quick, text line 37937. John and I were just having a discussion about the 04 Red Sox, that the documentary is coming out on Wednesday on Netflix.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Say that 86 story is a more compelling story. Not that it has a good ending, but there's so many pieces to it. Text line, what do you have, Zach?
One person said just 2004, plain and simple.
Yeah, but I do wonder if it's what you've seen, right? Because someone may say to me, hey, 75 was a great story as well, but I would say that, 75 was in the middle of the big red machine's dominance, right? So it was like, were you really going to eventually beat the Reds? It was just a very hopeful thing. Some would say 67 was a greater emotional feeling than 75, right? I'm just saying that with 86, it goes back to what happened in that championship series, literally with two outs and the Red Sox are being about to be eliminated and Gettman gets on first.
Yeah, I still think 04 is the best story.
But. And then Dave Sanderson, to give them the 6-5 lead. And then Donnie Moore, the pitcher in the game, would end up killing himself and his wife and a year or two later. And he even talked about, look, he constantly thought about Henderson constantly fouling off those fastballs, throws him the splitter, and Henderson puts it over the fence. Then the Red Sox go to the World Series, and then what happens in the 86 World Series? I'm not saying that the story ended well. Maybe that's kind of the emotion that some people have. I want it to be a good story because it ends well. And I'm telling you, there are some of the greatest movies of all time do not have a good ending.
Yeah, I still think, and we didn't even talk about the A-Rod piece of the 04 team too, which I think was huge.
But, yeah, but that, all, like
we,
I said,
we got to get to the guest here. We got to get to the guest because I don't want to keep Thor on hold. We are joined now by Thor Nystrom of Fantasy Life. Thor, appreciate you taking the time. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, boys.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. I want to get started. So for those that don't know Thor, first of all, as we said, best name in the business, but also great college football resource, great draft resource. And around here, Thor, the biggest story has been Drake May and his first start. So could you give our listeners a sense of where you evaluated Drake May coming out in the draft? And based off what you saw in his first start, is he living up to your expectations? Is he exceeding them, or is he falling short and there's things to work on?
I had him eighth overall on my board in the spring, and he played about as I expected last weekend. You know, you on both sides of it, right? Like you had the, you know, for instance, the first drive, that interception where you overthrow Pop Douglas. The mistake started right after the snap because he was keeping his eyes left. That brought the deep safety over. They only had one high safety on that play. So he brings him into the vicinity, and then it's a overthrow of Pop Douglas, which the safety is only in the vicinity to pick off because Drake May had his head turned to the left. So, you know, an example of the bad. But then on the other side of it, for instance, the Boutte throw is obvious here. You know, Boutte was able to stack Derek Stingley. That was pretty cool. And then just a fabulous throw by May. You know, he had about 15 yards ahead of him, just dropped that thing perfectly in the bucket. So you see the example of the high-octane arm talent. And a kid who was awesome down the field in college, particularly playing under Phil Longo, who throws downfield quite a bit. May was just an assassin, and that was a great example of the explosive plays that he can generate.
Thor, you talk about the draft class and where you had Drake May. Here on the show with John and I said that I think when we look at everything in the totality of their careers, I think that it may be Jaden Daniels with the one career, Drake May two, and Caleb Williams three. Do you think I'm off by that?
If things break right for May, no, I mean, not at all. You know, like the way that I put it in the spring was he has all the talent in the world. There's just a few weeds there in his game that need to be pulled out. And in particular, it's nonchalance with the mechanics in clean pockets. And then the mechanics, he'll entirely eschew them sometimes when he's in the muddy pockets. And then the glitches sometimes in the decision-making process. You know, and those sorts of things, just working on those. But yeah, you fix those things, he's going to be a perennial Pro Bowler. All the talent is there for sure.
Thor, I want to follow up on that because we've seen Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams start the year as starters for their teams. How would you assess them relative to Drake May? Like, is Drake May far behind them? Is he close to them? What's kind of the gap there between those guys that have been week one starters and May, who just had his first start the other day?
Yeah, I suppose it would be Jaden Daniels, then it would be big drop, and then you put May in the category with Caleb Williams of so far what we've seen. You know, both guys have tremendous skill sets. They both obviously need work, but we've seen flashes with both them, in particular Williams recently. And then you have the mountain cliff dropping off that, then Bo Nix.
So it's interesting you mentioned Bo Nix and the other players. I'm thinking about like the weapons that were provided for those guys. So Bo Nix came with somewhat of a running game that's already there, but a very strong offensive line. Caleb Williams, of course, they went and got all the pieces for him. The Keenan Allens, the DJ Moores, those are all set in stone for him, and a couple of offensive line pieces. And then with Washington, they did the same thing as well. What do you think would benefit Drake May the most right now? A dominant offensive tackle or a dominant number one wide receiver?
This is a tough question, and it's why I might have exercised more patience with him in year one, although he performed pretty well, you know, I think in lieu of the circumstance. But yeah, the supporting cast is an issue there. I guess I'm going to lean towards the Bengals philosophy on this when they took Ja'Marr Chase over Penei Sewell. I'll lean that to begin the dance with the dominant wide receiver one that he can make the connections with. But yeah, could definitely use both.
Thor, the receiver the Patriots did take in this past year's draft high was Jalen Polk in the second round. Of course, they took Javon Baker later. And there's been some inconsistencies with Jalen Polk in New England. He's catching less than 50% of his targets. He said that he doesn't have any mental issues as far as to overcome on the field, whereas Gerard Mayo, the head coach, said he did. Is anything of this, like, did you see any of this when you were assessing him in college? Any issues with the hands? Do you think this is just a tough spell to start his career? I mean, where were you at on Jalen Polk in the spring, and kind of where are you at on him now?
I was definitely lower on Polk, you know, heading into the draft. It's weird that ball skills have been the issue, because I thought that was the one thing that was guaranteed there. He didn't drop many passes at all at Washington. My issue, or not issue, but like my thing with him was more just I saw a slot receiver there, a non-explosive but reliable, efficient type slot. For me, that's just more devalued. You know, I think that the Patriots saw more there. And we'll see if, you know, who ends up being right on that account. But I just thought the ceiling was a bit lower for those reasons.
Talking to Thor Nystrom, Fantasy Life here on WEEI, KJ and Lyons. I guess I do want to look forward to next year's draft. One of the things I've mentioned to John here on the show is, hey, the NFL is really getting back to the two-back offense. There's more running going on right now. Guys are going down. I have concerns about Ramondre Stevenson. Is there a back that you think that the Patriots might be able to target in one of the later rounds, maybe fourth or fifth round next year, that could really be an asset? Or is that just too far out to project at this point?
No, definitely. Yeah, like if the Patriots want to add to that backfield and potentially draft a replacement for Ramondre Stevenson, this is the draft class to do it. This draft class is absolutely nuts loaded in running backs. Like I've been doing the draft rankings for maybe like 8 years now. This is one of the better running back classes that we're going to have. Ashton Jeanty, everyone has seen what he's doing. He's going to be the first one to go. It'd be crazy interesting to see where he goes. You know, I mean, he is moving in on Bijan Robinson type status as a prospect, but then the waves after that, the tiers after that, it is just so loaded. I mean, Ohio State right now in their backfield, they have two NFL starting running backs in their backfield in Judkins and Henderson. There was a whole bunch of guys that decided to stick back in college for an extra year. You know, between the COVID season and then the NIL incentives, we've seen some of those guys stick around longer than they have in the past, and a lot of them are coming out next year. So, yeah, this is a loaded class, and you could get a guy that could get on the field right away, certainly late third round, I think even the top half of the fourth round.
So, Thor, the biggest game of the day is Georgia versus Texas, and I think you can make the case this is one of the most anticipated games of the last 4 or 5 years in college football, at least from a regular season standpoint. Are there guys for Patriots fans that they should have their eye on tonight in Georgia versus Texas, whether they be first-round guys, second-round guys, or later in the draft guys as well?
Yeah, I think for Texas, Isaiah Bond, who is he got nicked up last week, but they say he's probable to play, and the reports look positive that he is. He came over from Alabama, just a super electric type wide receiver, obviously a position that the Patriots are going to use. Or, you know, look for in the draft. And then Texas has two awesome tackles. One of them's too young to declare, but the other, the left tackle in particular, is a first-round prospect. So that's someone to watch out for. And then Georgia, on their defense has been down, you know, going to the game in general. And so I'm wondering if this is a game where Quinn Ewers goes nuts. And if it is, that means Isaiah Bond almost assuredly is going to be going nuts. So those would be guys that I'd look at for the Patriots. Look at the offensive lines, in particular on the Texas side, and then Bond as well. But Georgia's got some draftable prospects on the offensive line, of course, as well.
Thor Nystrom, man, thank you so much hanging out with us. He's part of the Fantasy Life. And, man, have a great Saturday, and thank you for being here on KJ and Lions.
Appreciate you, boys. Have a good day.
You too. Yeah, that's pretty interesting there that he believes, and I was, because, you know, the big talk has been like, oh, man, you got to get an offensive tackle. You got to get an offensive tackle. But you're almost saying, well, with Drake May having a mobility to him, would you not try and go get probably the future receiver at the top or near the top of the draft if you end up like at 1, 2, 3, or maybe let's say you trade out of 1 down to 4. And out of that, you still get number 4, but you may end up with, let's say, 36, 37th in the second round. You take the receiver and then go get the tackle?
So I found that to be the most interesting answer of Thor's interview here, because He's really the first main draft person I've heard of that has said, no, they should just target the receiver. And I know Justin Reed on ESPN also had them taking Travis Hunter with a top 2 pick. But Thor was kind of like, no, just target the position of receiver. Like, and he didn't say this, but like, even if Travis Hunter's not there, just look at that position. I'm still one that says I would. So let's say the Patriots are picking at 4 or 5, right? I would want to trade down, take an offensive tackle, and then use my second round pick maybe to trade for a really good veteran wide receiver, or maybe even a future first next year. But I still look, that offensive line has been so bad this year. We saw it through the first 5 weeks with Brissett. We even saw it. I mean, let's not forget, May got strip sacked, and he got sacked three times as well in this game against Houston last week. So it's not like he came in and all of a sudden there was no pressure. Like, there still was pressure, and he did an okay job overall against it. But I just still think, especially with a young QB, I want to get that offensive line set up. And he mentioned Penei Sewell. Well, the Bengals, excuse me, they take Ja'Marr Chase instead. They go to the Super Bowl against the Rams. The Lions take Sewell, and they're one of the best teams in the NFC, right?
So yeah, but they haven't been to the Super Bowl yet, though.
But they were in the NFC Championship game last year. I think they're a Super Bowl contender.
Horseshoes and hand grenades. So, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but I mean, come on. The NFC Championship game, that's an elite team. So,
here's why I do like the idea of a receiver, and it goes to a play that happened in the Houston game last week. So you remember when Drake May rolls right, and he looks like he's about to get tackled at the feet, but he's able to kind of hop? If there's any comparison to Josh Allen that I saw, it was on that play. And if you've got a quarterback who can bust the pocket, go to his right, and still fire with complete accuracy, the league is still trying to figure out how to do that against Josh Allen. So if he's got that ability to escape to the right and still throw, and not across his body, but to that right side of the field or down the field, I think it's the receiver you go get. Now, my concern with Travis Hunter is he's playing too many plays in college right now.
That's
right?
A fair point.
You seem like once you get to the NFL, one, you're going to be on one side of the ball or the other. And two, what if you find out that, hey, as the receiver, he's not giving you what you expect at the NFL level because he didn't specialize in it? Like, we joke about kids trying to specialize in a sport, but Travis Hunter may be that one that says, you know what, we see him more valuable as a corner than we do as a receiver. And if you're the Patriots, you don't want to find that out and have already drafted him. Like, now we got to make him a better receiver. Like, you probably go get that top. Like, when you mentioned draft, you know, if you're in the top four and drop back, I think if you're one, because I think the Patriots will be 1-2-3 in the draft, somewhere in that 1-2-3 area. I think at three, if you're at three, you got to find out who's desperate to go get that number, the guy who's sitting at three, to be able to get the great deal. If you're sitting at 4-5, I think you should probably stay. Because where you move back to, what you may be looking for isn't going to be there. So, like, if you're 1-2-3, you get on the phone and make the deal. Once you start getting in 4-5-6-7, you may get played. Like, did you expect Michael Penix Jr. to be gone at 8?
No, I didn't, certainly.
Right. Yeah. So imagine if you were the Patriots and you thought, like, hey, we might have our eyes. And think about it. If you're the Patriots, you might have had your eyes on Michael Penix Jr., because he's a left-handed thrower and your best offensive lineman is on the right side, right? And in Wenyu. So you might say, hey, what if we kind of hang out for this guy? But if you get wind that the guy's gone, and then you would have no quarterback. So, again, I would say if they're in the top three, stay there. Like, don't trade back. Like, just stay there. Go get what you're going to get. Because whatever you're going to get, you're just going to move back a couple of spots and probably end up maybe two or three spots lower than where you're going to be in the second round. So I think it's very interesting. I think Drake May may provide enough mobility that you don't have to absolutely go crazy and lose your mind saying everything has to be done around an offensive tackle as much as it is getting control of a stud receiver when stud receivers aren't coming here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think one of the really interesting things, and I know I'm stating the obvious here, but is how they approach free agency and trade season, because they could sign a T. Higgins or trade for a DK Metcalf, or and I'm just throwing names out there, but like, they could add an impact receiver, I think, much easier than an impact tackle in free agency or trades, and then that would open them up to then take an offensive lineman with that first-round pick. So I think how they approach it, because they're going to go into the offseason, I think we can agree, with both of those things being significant needs, no matter what happens the rest of this year. So can they solidify one of them before the draft? So then they go into the draft and say, hey, we only need this position, or this is our clear top need, and we're going to go after it. Because I'm a proponent of trading down and adding more picks, especially if you can drop down three or four spots and add an extra second round pick or an extra future first. I'm all for that. But again, I want to go into the draft saying, hey, I have several needs, but I only have one really pressing, clear-cut need instead of both at offensive tackle and receiver.
KJ Lyons on WEEI, 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. Next, the Lyons Den, plus what our producer Zach witnessed. You don't want to miss that next here. WEEI, good Saturday to you.
This is KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI. Thank you so much for being here. Missed any of it? Don't worry about it. Thor Nystrom was just an amazing guest talking NFL. Gave us a kind of like, I don't want to call it a Woj bomb, but like an interesting nugget, I think, leading into the Patriots later in terms of what they're doing in the draft. You missed any of it, the Odyssey app is free. Plus, we talked about Barmore's response and his apologies. All of that, if you missed it, I can't remember how long ago it was in the show, but it was before now. So just the Odyssey app is free. Just type in WEEI.
3:45. We got to
you would be that guy.
Yeah. Well, no, because we did it right before Adjust to Jack.
Well, the other part of it is, and I know, John, you've just been salivating for this conversation to happen, is for those who've been following and hanging out with KJ and Lyons here over the last week, a few weeks, you know, we like to play each other in EA College Football 25. Don't say anything, John, because I know I can hear your thoughts. I'm looking right at you. I can hear your thoughts. And so it's been kind of one-sided. I have to ask this. I've scored a touchdown how many times against you?
So in the first game, you had that kickoff
all
return
together,
touchdown.
All together. Oh, you don't have to describe them, just how many.
I think twice. I think you've scored two touchdowns total. Maybe three.
So John and I, we talked about how we would play each other on Twitch. And Zach, you were able to witness it. How bad was it, Zach?
Yeah, it wasn't pretty.
I feel bad for John because, you know, like, he should be so much better at the game, right? And I'm totally kidding.
I will say.
What was the score?
Look, the World Series is coming up, and if you and I played MLB The Show, like the World Series, you would win that.
Don't try and show pity on me because is the game. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I would kill you now.
Yes, you would.
But that's not what we're discussing. So in EA College Football, I think we just kind of have this running thing going. That, John, I think I have to play you at least once a week on Twitch until I beat you. Because, Zach, here's what was brutal, is that I asked John if he wanted to play a rematch. He said, not today. I was like, oh, wow.
Well, you know, Thursday Night Football was starting. Was starting.
You were really clamoring over Denver, New Orleans?
Honestly, I was clamoring more over playoff baseball, which, by the way, the MLB playoffs, side note, have been fantastic this year. So that was the big thing.
They've been. I watched the Yankee Cleveland game last night.
Yeah,
I did text you.
Yeah,
that was fun. But I had no interest until it gets to Yankees Dodgers. Like let's just get to that point, and then maybe that's just me. It's like there's only so much time in a day. I got kids.
That's fair. Yeah,
you know, it's like get me to Yankees Dodgers, and you have me fully ensconced. Last night I was kind of like, okay, I just gotten off of doing the show last night. There was a game one because that's the other part of it. Yeah, good luck finding. I remember at one time it was like NBC or CBS or Major League Baseball on major network. Now it's kind of like you have to go find it on, like, I don't know, like True TV.
Yeah. You know what I think is crazy too? Like the NLCS is Mets and Dodgers, so the two biggest TV markets in North America, and they have it on FS1 instead of Fox every night. Like I can understand last night FS1 because it was like a 5 p.m. start.
Hey, the Masked Singer is very big with female demos.
Like Thursday night, it was an 8 p.m. start, and they have it on FS1. And like, no disrespect to FS1, but like, put it on Fox.
Part. It's like, you know, like you just can't assume that everybody has cable.
You're right. Like there's a lot of people. And look, in today's day and age, we think everything is streaming. There's a lot of people out there that don't have cable.
In fairness, the networks have been burned in previous matchups, right? When Tampa was in the World Series, they said more people went to a high school graduation than watch that series. So, and then you have to kind of determine these things a year out. So you can't say, hey, we're calling an audible on Fox. You know, you could call audibles on TBS and TNT and FS1 and stuff like that. But, I've missed these Mets-Dodgers games because they've been playing them in the middle of the day, which sometimes is cool, but it was cool when it was on a main network. Now trying to, like, hunt and find, you're like, oh, there it is. It's in the fourth tier of my cable package. So, Zach, thank you so much for your what did you say? You were going to try and bet on that game, that EA College.
Yeah, John, minus 52 and a half was easy money.
I would have covered.
Yeah, you did cover Jags, Jags here.
I won't say anything else.
All right, still to come.
We got to do like Kent State versus Middle Tennessee State.
No, because you know what you're going to do? You're going to go and take like random school, the FBS school random, and beat me by 40 with that, and then really start posting. Like you have a little bit of diabolical to you, Lyons.
Diabolical?
Yeah, man, that's why I've got to watch it. But I told Zach, my mission is I just want to see the emotional look and hear your voice when I beat you once. When
Sam I beat Houston you once. State is the team to go with.
Yeah, well, when I beat you
Louisiana
that
Raging Cajuns.
One time, I you know, like, Lions might have a single tear come down his face, and I want to see. I am all for
all it. All of a sudden, I'll be absent for the following Tuesday
there
show.
There you go. Like, John has quit WEEI yeah. just because he lost to KJ in football. Yeah. All right. Still to come, we got to talk about the Celtics opening their season on Tuesday, but right now, it's time for...
See the one about lions?
Can't lose to this guy after.
King of the jungle.
The diabolical lions, will not be hurting any animals or Christians in this bit, but will Drake May roar or meow tomorrow in his second start?
I think he'll roar. Jaguars have the worst pass defense in the NFL. They've given up big games to Joe Flacco and Tua and Stroud. I think he's going to roar.
All right, as I mentioned, the Celtics start their season Tuesday. Will the Celtics roar in their opener against the Knicks on national television?
Yes, they will. I think they win this game by 8 to 10 points and control it throughout.
We were just talking about Major League Baseball trying to find it on television. The Yankees, tonight, will they roar and go to the World Series for the 48,000th time?
Yeah, I actually think they will. I thought Cleveland blew it last night. When they tied it up, I was like, all right, maybe Cleveland can win and get back in this. And then when they ended up losing, I was like, I think that's it for them.
So I'm with you. Drake May roars, Celtics roar, and the Yankees roar. The Lions are feasting
yeah,
today, huh?
Positive Saturday afternoon, all roars.
Yeah, KJ and Lions continues next on WEEI. Thank you so much for spending your Saturday with us.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.